Welcome to the pod.
Okay, that's got rid of most of them.
Let's talk about the details of the heist. You need to be in Asda car park, Asda Coventry.
It's very much BYO coffee. Okay, guys.
At 5 past. But we're not going to specify the hour because anyone could be listening.
Yeah.
But at 5 past.
And then it's go time.
The budgie lands.
Let's steal some capons.
What is a capon?
A castrated cock. As in the bird.
Not the cock.
It's a chicken that's a bit bigger than a normal chicken, right?
It is crucially castrated.
But is that how they make it go big?
I like the idea. I'm going to cut off your balls and make you go big. It feels like a good threat.
I might do that, you know.
Yeah?
Well, to yourself.
Yeah, just want to get big.
Just see how big you get. You're going to jump on the hench bandwagon.
But without having to do the beefcake journey.
You're going to get a mullet and potats as well.
What's a potat?
Potats is where you like, it's like the opposite of sideburns. It's where you shave above the ear.
What, an inverted oblong of flesh going upwards from the ear into the side head?
Correct.
Yeah. I had a thought yesterday about sideburns.
Okay.
I saw a man with sideburns.
Yes. Like, this sounds like the beginning of a sort of nursery rhyme.
There once was a man with sideburns. Mm-hmm.
In proper mutton chops, you mean?
Yeah, like proper, like, you know, covering the cheeks kind of sideburns, mm-hmm. and quite long as well.
Yeah.
Which is quite rare these days.
Yeah.
I had them for a while as a student in a really sort of, ill-judged sort of move.
Yeah. What, mutton chop sideburns?
Yeah.
Other people are peroxide blonding their hair. streaks of purple, maybe a mohawk.
I'm going full Noddy Holder.
What was your thinking? I love these ideas that we flirt with at the student phase of life. Mm. We a sort of direction you think you might go in life.
Mm. I can tell you what the thinking was, actually. It was
sex appeal.
I think it was even sixth form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the fact that I was able to do it that I felt was a feather in my cap.
Yes, I think, yeah, that's a thing at that age. Yeah, because I was late pubertally. So I was a little squirt.
Well, you went through puberty only about 6 months ago, wasn't it?
Exactly, yes. And it pounced hard. And it punched through. But yeah, but I was always jealous of those like 13-year-olds who could grow sideys.
Bum fluff moustache.
Yeah, and even now, I mean, you'll see a bearded boy from time to time, you know, and it's... Mm. You know that boy.
And you go up to him and you start talking to him, and it's a bit embarrassing when you realise it's the geography teacher.
He's doing his undercover playground shift.
He's doing his undercover playground shift.
He's got his school uniform on, and he's going incognito.
So, yeah, so I had a fine pair around the age of 18.
So was it mutton chop, pork chop, lamb haunch? Which of the... Because there's obviously, if people get deep into the sideburn scene, there's a whole language...
Or leopard's rump. Yeah.
I had beef brisket.
You had a couple of briskets?
Yeah, a couple of briskets.
Well, that's a really... Because you're going to have quite thick, clammy hair, haven't you, to get that falling off the bone feel that you only get with a really slow-cooked brisket sideburn. Well done.
They did look awful, of course.
It's quite Victorian. Is it quite Victorian or something? It's quite sort of...
Sort of Gladstone or something like
that. It's quite Gladstone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's either urban Victorian or it's kind of rural at any other time.
Basically. Yes, sort of Darling Buds of May character. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So what I want to know is how did this fit into the overall Bonjamin aesthetic and look and music and vibe that you were trying to create at university?
Yeah, what are we talking? Are we talking kind of like wide collared shirt, unbuttoned to the navel, gold medallion, that kind of thing?
No. Or was it more come back to my? Do you want to come back to my room? Actually, After the student union meeting, come back to my place. Because I actually managed to pick up a couple of very good pigeons this morning from a gentleman in town.
And I've got some scrumpy warming on my radiator.
But that's prison style scrumpy, isn't it? That's homemade moonshine prison scrumpy that you make, which is incredibly dangerous, isn't it?
From found apples, yes.
It's made from the inside of McDonald's apple pies.
It's genetically not a scintilla of apple in it.
No, at all. But you smear it on the top of a very, very hot radiator, leave it for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Put a bit of wood varnish in it to give it a bit of tang.
And tell you what, drink a pint of that stuff and you'll think you're bloody Gladstone, won't you? You will. You'll think you're Brunel and you'll start devising a tunnel to Brussels, won't you? On a proper night out with Bonjamin in the uni days.
A suspension tunnel, yeah.
Yeah, suspension tunnel. So how did it fit into, I want to know, what's the music? So you've invited me back to, we've had a student union meeting. I've impressed you. Because it was one of those student union meetings where you have to...
With your rhetoric.
With my rhetorical stance. No, it's one of those student union meetings where... By the way, I didn't go to any student union meetings, but I imagine it's this kind of thing that happened. It'd be things like, let's do a debate, but we both of us have to take up an utterly absurd proposition. Yeah, it's that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I commend to the House that we should allow ostriches to copulate with pandas. Get ready for the rhetoric.
I contend that we should cover every square inch of Scotland with castanets.
I will be the Home Secretary one day.
No, but I genuinely will be. That's what's so fucking terrifying. Yeah, that's... I've impressed you at the student union with my rhetoric skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's the Bonjamin clobber? What's happening?
What am I wearing?
Yeah, what's the Bonjamin mise en scène?
I'm wearing a far too large duffel coat.
Good.
Yeah. Ah, I wasn't expecting duffel.
Mm-hmm. Kind of Paddington-style duffel.
Because to me, the duffel, I don't know if this is right, but for me, the duffel is a low-status move.
I wasn't giving big dick energy, let's put it that way.
No, because to me...
So the duffel on the inside didn't have lots of Polaroids of naked ladies or anything. It would have been Polaroids of, like, Birds of Paradise or something like that. Something whimsical.
Duffels don't have Polaroids.
You didn't need to have Polaroids inside your duffel, Mike.
You don't know what a duffel is, Mike. I'm going to talk to Ben. You Google duffel.
Are you thinking of a family photo album? Because that's not a duffel coat.
Which does keep the rain off, and I keep recommending it to other people. Aren't they the ones with the wooden, toggles?
Wooden toggle. Everyone just calm the heck down.
Mike, you can't parry away the fact that you, for some reason, think that on the inside of a duffel coat is loads of Polaroids by saying,
yes.
Oh, yeah, it's the one with the toggles.
Yeah.
You've just done a bit of kind of rhetorical trickery to us.
Actually, a brilliant rhetorical move, just the kind of thing that impresses Ben Partridge.
I associate duffel coats with 8-year-old children or midnight municipal park-based sexual deviants.
It's not pervo, though.
Have you seen Paddington?
Yes.
Have you seen it?
I don't think duffel's pervo.
No, okay. Duffel, to me, duffel is like, it's saying, oh, I'm a soft, lovely, nice... It's sweet. That's why I think of it as low status. Whereas the coat that I preferred at the time, and have done a lot in my life, is, to me, the polar opposite of the duffel, which is the trench.
Yeah, that's the perv coat.
He either works for the law or against the law, but either way, he's a maverick. Okay. And he's packing.
He's packing Polaroids.
He's packing Polaroids. But because I've gone trench in the past, which has all kinds of problems it carries with it. Yeah. But trench is saying, I operate in the dark spaces of society.
Oh, yeah. Or I am Inspector Gadget.
Yes.
And I got a lot more Inspector Gadget remarks than I hoped.
I think in this time I was operating sort of pseudo leather jacket is what I tried for a bit.
So you were pseudo leather?
Oh, sort of leather. Like long leather jacket.
Maybe sort of just below the hips, not long, no.
Okay, so you hadn't been swept up by the Matrix craze?
No. Oh, that's no. I think I was reaching back towards an Indiana Jones vibe, but didn't have the budget, and that's all that River Island had on stock at the time.
And was it with the Phil Mitchell collar?
No, there was no. It was the same material throughout, the same sort of pseudo leather throughout. There was no fur or ruff or what have you.
Mike, my duffel was also from River Island.
Good stuff. Very reliable.
I've got so many questions.
So we've got the duffel. We've got the mutton chops.
Yeah, you've got a pair of jeans that are just a bit too big and
pork pie.
If I wasn't wearing the duffel, you'd see my ass.
Right,
crack.
That's good news. T-shirt, shirt, waistcoat.
Not a waistcoat, Mike. Come on. I'm a loser, but I'm not that loser.
Okay. To me, I'm a bit confused by the look, because it's how the beef brisket sideburns make sense of, alongside the duffel coat. And you're saying the trousers are too big?
Yeah.
They're sort of falling down a bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so when I see you, if I'm seeing you at university, I think, that's a conundrum, and I don't want to know the answer to it. I'd move on. We wouldn't have made friends. I just go, that's an enigma, but it's a sort of, it's an enigma that I just don't need to know the solution to. I'm going to move on. Do you know what I mean? It'd be like a sort of book of puzzles on a train. I'd look at it and think, I'm not going to flick through that.
Do you think that doesn't add up? You think that's a
problem? I want to know what's tying it together.
It's the duffel and the sideburns to me don't.
Really?
I need more information. I need to know shoes, headwear, shirt.
So I think, I can't really remember, but I think shoes would have been sort of Converse, those kind of shoes.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm intrigued. And also, Ben, just quick to finish the picture, what music are we playing as we go into it? So I'm thinking he's got a duffel coat. He's approachable. Mm-hmm. He's got pork chop sideburns.
He's definitely carrying
his Victorians.
CD Walkman.
He's got a CD Walkman. What's pumping?
I had a quite nice leather satchel I'd pair with this.
Like a record band or like a proper satchel?
No, it was my mother's satchel when she was a schoolgirl.
Oh, that's nice. Vintage touch.
Yeah, it was really nice, actually.
Respects tradition. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was listening to an MP3 player.
MP3, okay.
MP3, so you were slightly ahead of the tech
cutting
curve.
Edge. Yeah.
MP3 player. Is that the same one which is the iPod?
No. They were the little square discs.
No, that's mini disc.
That's a mini disc, Mike.
What did you say?
MP3.
Oh, MP3. Oh, that is like an iPod.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike, I wasn't going to you for the confirmation on this story. A, because it's about tech, and B, because it's about Ben. But thanks very much. Really appreciate
it. I am underqualified. I'm trying. I was transported to mini discs.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a very brief window. Mm. Okay. So we've discussed Converse, because the classic middle-aged thing is leather jacket. It's sort of, isn't it?
It's one of them, yeah. Yeah. Or overtight jeans with sports blazer, yeah.
Right. So just quick mental note, just rethink outfit for tour show. And also rethink the bit where you think the trousers couldn't be tied, but then pull them off and there's actually even a tighter pair underneath. Maybe rethink that bit.
A trousushka.
Trousushka. And also rethink the bit where you think that people will think that's the most garish sports blazer imaginable, then rip it off and there's an even more garish sports blazer that's even tighter underneath that.
And then, with the badge of a disgraced sports club on it.
Yeah. I wish I'd had a leather jacket. I wish I'd sort of gone full leather. Because the thing about leather jacket, right, is people say it's a middle-aged thing that you get a leather jacket because you're trying to recapture your youth. But I think, no one actually has. I mean, but I didn't have one in my youth and no one really did enough, I feel.
No one I knew had one. No.
Yeah. I had a big, stupid, fake one with aeronautical collars.
What?
An aeronautical insignia as well?
Top Gun jacket.
Full Maverick.
No, I never had the Top Gun one. I wish I'd done that.
Big tiger on the back, something like that?
I wish I'd done that. All these things can't be pulled off anymore, sadly. I think that middle-aged thing is you're trying to recapture something which didn't happen at the time anyway. Because it's not as if in your 20s you're going around on a Harley with a snake leather jacket.
No, that's it. Yes.
No, it's a good point.
Thanks.
It's often things I could have done, and maybe there's a bit of disposable income or
I think that's the thing.
Or access to more credit than you had then. You know, one of the two.
I had a theory about sideburns.
Oh, yes. So we've not had the theory yet, have we?
Let's hear the theory of sideburns.
A theory is probably a too grand a word for what I'm about to say.
Master thesis.
So basically, I saw a bloke. He was probably in his 40s.
Yeah.
Had big mutton chop sideburns. And I just had this moment of clarity where I went, those never look good on anyone and you just should never do it. We should just get rid. Like, that's it. They should just go.
So for one thing, I think sideburns are quite an odd thing to get your head round when you're the age where you're developing hair there, and you've got this ability to grow a sideburn, and suddenly you've got a choice to make. And I remember feeling that it's a really difficult choice to make for a man, I think, to do with sideburns, because I remember thinking, you know, if I instruct the barber to cut the sideburn completely, you end up with this straight bit, which sort of says, I'm I'm right-leaning politically. I don't think jazz is cool.
I'm ready to accept a military command.
I'm ready to accept a military command. I believe that responsible management of the borders is the first responsibility of the government. It just seems to be making a deliberately square gesture to cut it off. Mm. Completely. It's sort of saying corporate, especially at that age. It just seems incredibly square.
Yeah,
I felt as a teenager to ask the, you know, when the barber asked what to do, to say I'm just going to move. But then you've got this thing which is then, if you have it, how long? You've just got this oblong. You're suddenly dealing with a hairy oblong on your face, and no one's ever warned you about this or prepared you for it, which is what to do with this flat, hairy oblong on your face. And then it's like, how low down does it go? If you imagine a sort of Tetris oblong going, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Falling. Like, how low does it go? Obviously, you're not going to cut it off from the top section. But
when I'm in that situation, Henry, I've got incredibly wonky ears, right?
Whenever
I get to that bit in the barber interaction, okay, I have to say, okay, you're going to try and cut these off now, and you're going to try and level them off. But doing that, you're entering into like an Escher world where nothing's real anymore. You don't know which way is up or down.
This customer doesn't have his own spirit level attached within his head. It's not. Yeah.
But even if you tried to put a spirit level near it, it would just go on fire. It's like a perspective mindfuck.
Please do not use my ears as a guide for the horizontal. Yeah. Please. There is no true north.
No horizontal
here.
Exists.
There is no horizontal. They will betray you. They are capricious bedfellows, my ears, when it comes to judging at the horizontal. Do not trust them. Yes, they're luring you in. Yes, they're alluring. But they cannot be trusted.
But this is the problem, Henry. You're so right. So they don't give you a guide, basically, at all.
No.
So then if they try and do it, but disregarding the ears, the problem is that your sideburns are viewed in the context of your ears.
Yes. You can't.
And so they'll look
them.
Absolutely mad. Okay. So I always get into the same thing where they take a sort of millimetre off at a time, going left, right, left, right. And they look at me. Oh, and it's not right.
They start to get motion sickness.
Yes.
Yeah. The room is spinning.
Yeah.
They're calling for a sick bowl.
They're getting a bad case of topiarist's elbow in both arms. Yeah.
Which their father's father warned them would happen. Such a customer would come. Yeah.
And then you just, at the end of the day, do you just go, look, just keep it easy. Just let's go for the dolphins. Just a couple of dolphins.
So what I say in the end is I end up just going, oh, just kind of leave it and I'll do it at home.
Yeah.
When I shave.
And how do you solve it? How do you solve for Benjamin's ears as a barber? What do you do?
I think I've just looked enough at my face over the years while shaving to kind of, I don't know. And I don't care that much, whereas the barber wants to get it right because it's their job. And
We all develop an uneasy truce with our own face, don't we? Yeah.
Exactly.
Over time. Yeah. Well, it's a language, isn't it? Hair is a language.
Hair is a language.
And I've got a very small vocabulary.
Now, before we turn on the Bee Machine, I thought we should probably do a little plug.
Oh, yeah.
For our tour.
Good point.
When is this episode going out?
This is the second one of September, isn't it? Which is, what, the 10th?
Yeah, so tonight is London.
What? Oh, this is huge.
Holy moly.
Holy macaroni.
If you're listening on day of release, it's now the 10th of September, and tonight is our first date on the tour. We're doing London Queen Elizabeth Hall.
Get yourselves to the beating heart of London's West End, and then take either a bus or Uber to the South Bank, where we'll be performing.
And I think we're sold out, so you don't do that unless you have to.
Don't do that either. Just stay where you are. Hold your horses.
However, at time of recording, there are three ones that haven't sold out. There's Birmingham, where there's a very small amount left.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Newcastle and Glasgow, where there's a not inconsiderable amount of seats left, just because we're in big venues in those fine towns.
But they are flying off the shelves in Glasgow and Newcastle. But just it's a very, very big shelf.
Newcastle's the 5th of October.
And then Monday the 10th of November for Glasgow. Monday night, big night in Glasgow, Monday night. Yeah. Usually. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's the start of the weekend, isn't it? Yeah.
And I'll put ticket links to those in the show notes. And for those of you who are coming to the tour, I look forward to seeing you. I'm really looking forward to it.
It should be exciting.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Henry does mean that, even though it doesn't sound like it.
It's going to be ruddy brilliant. I mean, we're going to be performing on the same stage as various pianists and stuff, probably. Aren't we? In the Queen
and
Elizabeth
pantomimes.
Hall. Yeah. Pantos.
Well, the Queen Elizabeth Hall, yeah, that's basically a classical music venue, isn't it? I don't know how we've ended up there. But you'll be playing the cello, right, Henry?
I'll be playing the cello. I mean, the acoustics presumably will be extraordinary.
I'll be on Cor Anglais. Good. Cor Anglais debut.
That's a kind of vanilla cream, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a kind of vanilla cream, yes.
Yeah.
You just stick a couple of reeds into it and let it rip.
And start blowing. Fingers crossed. It'll make a nice noise. I could actually dig out my flute. You know what? My flute teacher from school, if he's dead, would turn in his grave if he knew that I was playing flute on the stage of the Queen Elizabeth Hall, where great flautists from James Galway all the way through to
some of the silver-fluted flautists.
To some of the silver-fluted flautists and some of the titanium flautists. And, of course, R.I.P., the magnesium flautist, who died during his first performance when his head exploded. Yeah.
Yeah, so Henry will be playing a potassium flute at the Queen Elizabeth Hall.
And that's not a metaphor. Repeat, it's not a metaphor.
But if the slightest bit of moisture is to escape his lips, we will all die.
So it's going to have to be crackers for breakfast.
So let's turn on the bee machine.
Great.
This week's topic, as sent in by Loz.
Thank you, Loz.
Thanks, Loz.
From Bristol.
Ah.
Is Australia.
Ooh.
Oh, mate. Oh, mate.
Henry's always hair-triggered with the accent.
Oh, for
I don't know God, what your mate. Australia history is, though, Henry. Have you physically been to Australia?
Well, if you count Thailand... then yes, I've been to North Australia. Well, no, I have been to Australia actually, and it doesn't take as long as people say. It was actually only 40 minutes on the Piccadilly line to Earls Court.
Oh, lovely stuff.
That's a real London joke, though.
it's such a London joke from like the 90s, I think. I don't think it's even. There was a period where, for some reason, lots of Australians lived in Earls Court. I've no idea why.
And there were lots of walkabout pubs everywhere.
There were lots of walkabout pubs, mate. Mm. I used to live in Barons Court, which is sort of. If you thought that Earls Court was a liminal non space. Mm. Sort of between zones, just a sort of nowhere zone, then you've not been to Barons Court. Because that is, Barons Court is the Earl's Court of Earl's Court.
But Barons Court was given a measurable existence, I'd say, but by, and we've talked about it before, the level of just abject, grotesque shittiness of your flat.
That's true.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, Mike, I was young. I was in my mid-30s. Come on. Who doesn't have an open bin policy in their mid-30s?
A lot of good times in that flat, though, to be fair.
No, it was good. It was a good time flat. So I've not actually been to Australia. Have either of you been?
I'm pretty sure Mike has. A couple of times.
Yeah.
I've never been.
Had quite an intense experience doing a comedy festival in Adelaide. Although that was made better because a friend of mine was getting married in Perth, so I went to Perth.
Where was the intensity coming from?
I don't know, but I got the impression that possibly the promoter in the UK had fallen out with the promoter in Australia, and when I got to Australia, I didn't feel like I was particularly welcome by the promoter in Australia.
So the crucial question is, was this after they'd just seen you doing the gig? Because often there's a little clue.
Well, a misunderstanding
as to the nature of the noise the audience was supposed to make intermittently after you left pauses after saying things.
Well, I think they might have heard word of my skills on stage before it even got out there, it occurred to me before it even got out there that they might not want me there much because I wasn't in any of the listings, which was a bit sort of troubling. And then I got there. I just sort of presented myself at the venue the day before and found out that there was a meeting with all the other acts and there was a sort of preview going on in about an hour. And I just sort of stepped off a plane.
I think that's called they gave you what is known as the Australian cold shoulder. I think what happened is on the way over, they'd have seen one of your clips. The heads of the Adelaide Comedy Festival would have got together and gone, right, we're going to have to give this guy the full Australian cold shoulder, the old Aussie cold shoulder. So we pretend he doesn't exist. We don't invite him to the meetings. We don't talk to him. We don't address him.
And we also send him away when the reviews are in. That also happened on a couple of nights. You send him away. Stay away.
You deal with him like you deal with a croc. You pretend it's not there. And eventually the croc isn't sure if it's there either.
And you don't give it any accommodation, even though the other acts have got accommodation. So you have to square his own accommodation in a bit of a panic at the last minute. Ended up staying in quite a weird youth hostel.
In
a tiny room that does have a window, but it faces the window of another room that's a foot away. So you have to draw the curtains at all times.
Crocodiles find that incredibly disheartening. It's very rare that a crocodile will keep attacking you after it's stayed a night in that hotel. Very, very rare. We'll do the same thing with this M. Wozniak figure. All right?
Yeah. Oh
dear.
The arrangement had been that the UK promoter would pay for the plane ticket and then the other one would sort out the stuff at the other end. So But that none of that really happened, really. So I was just, I was a thorn in this person's side for the entire month. And it's quite a weird festival, the Adelaide one, because I don't know if I've ever talked about it before, but the sense I got was that, because it's in South Australia, which is a weird place anyway, to my mind, because it was a free state. So it wasn't populated by ex-cons. So it's a place where therefore the first people there from the UK were like, well, we haven't got any criminals here, so we're not going to need a police force or anything. This is basically going to be paradise. Cut to 45 minutes later when they've started killing each other and shoplifting and burgling and they have to build a prison in a hurry. So there's this weird kind of with the free
state. All cons are ex-cons.
No, exactly. Some pre-cons, exactly.
Some pre-cons. You can be a pre-con and turn into a con.
They're very proud of it there. There's got lots of vineyards and everything, but there's a weird thing where they're far away from everywhere else, and they have the comedy festival happens in the same month that everything happens. Everything. So there's other festivals, there's music going on, there's sports festivals, there's some racing thing that happens across the town. Basically, the whole of South Australia pours into the city for 1 month to let off steam. There's a weird, month-long kind of stag do vibe I found to the city.
An insert into that, a fairly fresh Mike Wozniak, I'm guessing, quite early on.
A pretty fresh Mike Wozniak, out of his depth, in a state of blind panic, possibly just about being able to break even, given the circumstances he's been met with on arrival.
Did you have a visa?
I had a visa. But that's the other thing I found strange. I had a visa. Yeah, that was sorted, I think, again, by the British end person. But they were very suspicious. I found, Australia's one country, a bit like America, where I've found the couple of times I've been there, they don't really believe you when you say that you're only there for a bit. They assume he wants to stay. He wants to live here forever. Yeah. And why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But also, you were smuggling 20 kilograms of bushmeat.
Yeah, there was the bushmeat, obviously, but that's part of the course in those parts.
Because to break even, you had to ram your hand luggage in, you full of bushmeat on the way back.
Yeah. That's the only way. And I think most Australians would understand that.
Yeah, and you had to create a kind of bushmeat, a kind of effigy of a person that you said was a emotional support bushmeat effigy, didn't you? That had to sit next to you on the way back.
So I don't want to be all sort of negative about Australia, but that was that's the longest time I spent in Australia. And it was tough.
Mm.
I'd say most Australians I met were very nice and welcoming.
I imagine they're all ripped. In my mind, they're all ripped.
They're definitely on the whole, they're a much more handsome bunch. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I suppose most of our experience of Australia comes through neighbours, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was my starting point, certainly, yeah.
It's weird because through neighbours, you got to get a glimpse of an element of Australian society that really wasn't that different to... It was just people living in a sort of suburban
cul-de-sac.
Residential area.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we absolutely loved it in the UK. Just these people living fairly sort of mundane residential lives.
Yeah. That could have been in Surbiton. Mm.
I think it's because their sort of resting face was slightly smilier than the resting face of somebody in Coronation Street.
That's right. It was Surbiton but cheerful, wasn't it?
Yeah. More tanned. Yeah. Also, yeah. I enjoyed hearing the name Henry said like that. You're such a loser, Henry. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, there was a Henry, wasn't it? Henry Ramsey?
There was a character called Henry in Neighbours, and Mike from Neighbours, who went on to become Guy Pearce.
Yes.
He played this. Yeah,
Who was the one who had his wife in a coma for years? Daphne. I thought he was Mike. Was he not? What was his name?
Harold.
No, not Harold Bishop. You're thinking of Harold Bishop.
Harold disappeared.
Who died but didn't die. He fell off a rock in Tasmania.
He fell off a rock.
And then reappeared.
Yeah. And reappeared like years later.
Years
later. An absolute first in human history that someone managed to survive lost at sea for about 4 years.
and then walked straight into a retail job.
Walked straight back into a retail job. Because it would have been a different version of Microsoft. He wouldn't have. There's no way he'd have been able to just take it up like that after 4 years.
No, but it was in. I think it was at a Salvation Army shop. I think I seem to remember. But I did love they did go for the character in a coma thing. It's a great trope.
So what's the character in a coma trope?
That's like a soap opera trope. Within a soap opera, they'll just have a character who's in a coma for a long time.
But doesn't that essentially mean that the actor can have a sort of sabbatical where they can go away for a year?
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
yeah.
And it was many years in the case of Daphne, as I believe her name was, and she didn't recover. She had a last gasp, a few words. Des, that was the husband. I love you, Des. And then that was it. She was gone.
I've just looked up coma neighbours.
Okay.
In Neighbours, several characters have experienced comas.
Yeah.
Okay. Often as a plot device to create drama or facilitate character development. Some notable examples include Finn Kelly, who woke from a coma with amnesia and later sought revenge.
But for what?
Can I say, you know your characters are paper thin if them going into a coma is an opportunity for character development. Yeah.
So it says, when Finn's memories did return...
Yeah. He realised he'd been treated with slightly the wrong antibiotics by the intensivist on call the night he was admitted.
But him seeking revenge led to violence and his own death.
As it so often does, guys. Often does. Let's cut it out with the old vengeance game, shall we? Never ends well.
The one you're thinking of, Mike, is Daphne Clark.
Daphne Clark and Des Clark.
Daphne's coma resulted from a car accident at her father's funeral.
Oh, dear.
Or after her father's funeral.
Yeah.
She briefly regained consciousness to say goodbye to her husband before passing away.
Yeah.
Essentially, so I think the way soap operas work is a lot of heavy lifting. I'd say over 50% of the plot... Because it's a kind of starting out job in acting, maybe not as well paid as other jobs, but at least 50% or more of the storylines are just there in order to sort of work around actors coming and going, needing to stop for a bit, getting another job.
Who's doing a detergent advert?
That's why there's so many comas and deaths.
Yeah. And meals as well, because if you got everyone there in a meal, just have a meal, just have a confab, cover some exposition.
And also constantly serving orange juice. Do you remember at home, do you want some juice? Oh, I'll have some juice. Yeah, let's come over here. We'll have some juice.
In the 80s and 90s, orange juice, I mean, it was very, very rare we were offered orange juice. It very rarely happened. It was like high days and holidays, super treat. These guys, they came in straight from school. They poured themselves a glass of orange juice without asking anyone. What? Surely you need to ask permission if you've got the orange juice. You know?
But it's because, essentially, you've got a situation where characters are constantly just talking and there's very little action. So they've got to be constantly making orange juice. So it seems like, Henry, I think I'm pretty sure I've discovered that my mother is actually my brother and she's disinherited my sister. And I need to work out whether or not that's me.
Who's pregnant with the lawyer.
And
so, we're all in comas.
All right, I think we're going to need some orange juice. Come in, mate. And they'd come in and you'd have some orange juice. Also, getting rid of characters, there's had to be more and more outlandish deaths and stuff because because characters are always leaving to do better jobs or whatever in their acting careers. And but I'm pretty sure this happened. I've never had this confirmed or not. There was a character called Shane in Neighbours, and I'm pretty sure he just went to his room to look for something once,
yeah,
and never came back, and was never mentioned again. I'm sure that's what happened.
Which is an absolutely brilliant piece of plotting by the writer. If you are interested in writing scripts and you're not sure what to do with the character, but you may need them later on, take them away to their room.
They've got to look for something.
Don't specify how they've got to look for something.
They've got to look for something.
You've got as long as it takes, buddy.
I'll tell you what, mate. I will have an orange juice, but just give us a sec. I'm going to find something. All right, mate. Yeah, sure. I'll just keep the orange juice here on the side while you're waiting. Yeah, why don't you... Shall I pour the orange juice?
Orange juice has been here for 17 years.
Well, I'm afraid this orange juice doesn't pour anymore. It's just too solid. It's solidified orange juice.
It's petrified.
It's petrified. He went to his room and never came back. I'm pretty sure that happened.
Was that Craig McLachlan? Was he a Shane? Or was that a different Shane?
He was in Neighbours, but I don't think he was Shane, no. Okay. I think we should just explain to listeners, maybe those living outside of the UK or Australia, what Neighbours is. I mean, I think they would have got
like it. That's like having not read War and Peace. Surely everyone
would. Come on, guys. imagine if War and Peace was cut into sort of 25-minute chunks and you had to read it every day, Monday to Friday. Mm-hmm. Once at lunchtime and then again at 4:30. The same chat. Was it 4:30?
Imagine if all the characters, instead of drinking hot tea from a samovar, are drinking cold orange juice. I'm pretty sure that in the 70s, I think my parents told me this, that you'd sometimes go to a dinner party or something and the starter would be a glass of orange juice.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it was a luxury, you see.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Now we're in a time when you could get an orange in the supermarket every day of the year, but it's not always, you know, going back, that's not the case.
But I think there's something about the 70s and citrus.
Yeah.
That, like, citrus was glamorous. Because I'm sure that's where eating grapefruit for breakfast came in, which my parents still do, which I think of as a very 70s thing.
So uncomfortable. Such an unpleasant start to the day.
Incredibly unpleasant start to the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Grapefruits are just horrible, aren't they?
It's an attack on the face from the inside. I think orange juice is quite 70s, isn't it? And I'm also I'm picturing that wobbly, that from concentrate. It's a kind of wobbly.
Yeah.
It's not really a liquid. It's somewhere between a liquid and a solid, isn't it? It's a kind of wobbly or
it's a kind of glass.
It's a kind of glass. It's a form of soft glass. Which goes into your mouth and then incredibly acidic on the way down, and then you're left with a kind of a film, an almost impossible to disperse kind of film on the inside of your head.
The rare occasions we did have orange juice in the house as well, we were prevented. We had propaganda, my sister and I, to prevent us from guzzling it, because they knew that we wanted to guzzle it by being told that if we had more than one glass, we would immediately get the squids.
it's so much fibre.
It wasn't explained. It was just...
So you must have been watching Neighbours thinking, these people must be constantly shitting.
Yeah. I didn't get how they were looking so healthy and blithe, you know. Didn't get it.
I'm in Scotland at the moment. I had a full Scottish breakfast yesterday, which was absolutely fantastic.
Lovely.
With the square sausage? The lawn sausage?
No, actually, but there was a big square of haggis.
Whoa. Oh, nice. Nice.
But also there was a single slice of orange on the plate. And it was so nice at the end of the breakfast. It was like the perfect thing.
Like a sort of half-time orange?
Yeah, just really? To cut through all of the kind of
But no
fattiness.
Orange juice, just the physical...
Yeah, it was great. Nice. I'm going to do it from now on.
Okay.
It's the perfect end to a fried breakfast. That's a tip for you all. Oh, I've got another citrus tip.
Yes, please.
This Christmas, for some reason, there was a sense between me and my partner that we should have a grapefruit on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where this came from, and I've never had it before. Yeah. But it felt like, isn't that not something I'm meant to do? And I don't quite know where the idea came from.
I've not heard of that. Trying to start something. Yeah, okay.
But neither of us, I certainly don't like grapefruits because they're horrible because it's like being assaulted by a fruit.
Yeah.
So I bought a thing called a pomelo. Have you ever had a pomelo?
No, what is that?
Imagine a grapefruit, but it's really nice.
What? A pomelo?
Yes. Get yourself a pomelo.
Blimey.
And it's one of those fruits, you only go to the grocer and you can buy a fruit and it comes in, it's got like...
Still got it fur on, right?
No. It's got polystyrene around it.
Because it's taken 7 weeks to transport.
Yeah, from
the
Taiwan.
The carbon footprint is absolutely massive. From the Patagonian lowlands.
I've never seen a pomelo before.
Pomelo.
Get yourself a pomelo.
Yeah, right.
I think I'd feel like a bit of a knob asking for a pomelo.
Yeah. Well, I think you're just the sort of guy I'd imagine asking for a pomelo. I think you'd get away with it fine.
I imagine you cutting in front of Sophie Ellis-Bexter if they've got any pomelos.
just a couple of pomelos.
Just getting the last pomelo, even though she's promised a pomelo for her child for his 7th birthday.
I imagine Sophie Ellis-Bexter is the kind of person who's got a child called Pomelo. Quite a nice name for a little girl, Pomelo.
Pomelo.
It's a good name, yeah. Yeah, or a jaunty boy, I think, or a kind of, yeah. Like a sort of Italian acrobat, perhaps.
Pomelo. Get down from the ceiling, Pomelo.
Yeah.
Pomelo, your spine. Think of your spine.
Think of your spine. Don't, be careful, be careful. Oh, no, he's fallen into the large pot of Arrabbiata sauce that I'm making. Arrabbiata. Oh, I screwed up.
But what, you say you screwed up. What would success have looked like, Henry?
It's always important to ask yourself that question. But I tell you what, this is a timely reminder of the fact that there are so many fruits out there that we don't know about. And for some reason, they're just the big hitters. Apple.
Yeah.
Banana. Pear. Orange. Certain ones have risen to the top and are ubiquitous. But these are the tip of the iceberg. There are so many fruits. It's every mad fruit you can imagine exists. Yeah. The star fruit, the chair fruit. There'll be a fruit that's the shape of a chair.
Yeah.
And it'll taste like a mixture of banana and grapefruit. And they always taste like a mixture of banana and grapefruit.
But what happened to the first English person that tried a lychee? Do you know what I mean? That would have absolutely blown their minds.
But you know what? I sometimes think, why is it that certain fruits have risen to the top?
Mm.
And I think you look at something like a lychee.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a strong fruit. It's got a nice flavour. But the ratio of flesh to pip is just not good enough to be big, to be apple. You're not going to be apple, mate. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
The rate, like, there's always something wrong with it.
You're going up against watermelon. You know, you're having a laugh.
You're up against watermelon.
Yeah.
Hang on there, Mike. I think watermelon's B tier. That's not apple. It's not apple, mate.
Well, it depends what.
Don't come here and tell me watermelon's an apple.
You know what watermelon is? It's a one off summer vibes purchase.
Exactly. It's not.
You buy a massive chunk of watermelon from a local shop for about £4. It sits in your fridge and you eat a bit of it. No. There's too many pips.
It gets absolutely devoured. Yeah, this end, yeah.
It's not apple.
But the ones that haven't hit the big time, because I think a lot of them are probably quite bitter about it. You know, light cheese will be like, oh, why is it that we're not up there with banana, with pear, etc. Yeah. But look to yourself is what I'd say to light cheese. You've got too big a pip ratio. Sorry. And the other one I'd say is kiwi. Why are kiwis not?
Well, kiwi
as big
and
apples?
Light cheese both classic examples of that. There's slightly too much work to get in the first place.
Too much work to get in, and also in the case of a kiwi. Over 100% of them are disgusting, in my experience. I'm still waiting for the one that isn't disgusting. They're either too bitter or too smungy.
I'm slightly allergic to kiwi fruit.
Okay,
quite a few.
But I always forget that every 3 years or so, and I'll have one and go, my mouth's all gone all wrong, and I'm swelling up.
Well, I saw this thing on Instagram the other day. It was this guy, and he was in some tropical island somewhere, and he was just talking you through fruits, new fruits. And the amount of fruits he was going through that were new was crazy. It was like, and here's a Brian fruit. And it was a fruit shaped like someone called Brian. And you just rip the skin off the face. I know it looks really convincingly like a Brian, but just hold your nerve.
It will cure your asthma, but it'll also give you 10 years of diarrhea.
Really will. But he'll peel it off. And then, it tastes a bit like banana. And then the flesh tastes a bit like banana. And so like, they're all like combinations of each other, these fruits, of the flavors. And, you know, you do go on holiday and there'll be like a dragon fruit or there'll be like a rabbit fruit.
When I went to Brazil, I ate a lot of acerola.
Oh, I've never heard of that ever.
What was that?
Which I'd
like?
Never heard of. I've just typed it in.
Yeah.
Because I think acerola might be like the Portuguese word for it. So I was like, I wonder what it is in English.
Yeah.
In English, it's called the wild crepe myrtle.
Wow. Myrtle as in the flower, or the girl's name, myrtle.
M-Y...
Yes. R-T-L-E.
And crepe as in the French dessert?
No, as in C-R-A-P-E.
What is that?
It's a wild crepe myrtle. I don't know what else I can say.
As opposed
really.
To the domesticated crepe myrtle.
Let's quickly round off this section, but just quickly doing each
fruit
of us saying
conclusions.
When they're good. So when it's a good one, what is the best fruit? Just in a circle.
Oh, give me a second though to think about this.
Because I know mine 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, so when it's like the perfect
when
it, one.
When it's a great one.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, great question.
See, I think that would change from time at different points, but I'm prepared to play the game.
Well, let's give you the context, Mike. Yeah. You're on death row.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can have one perfect fruit and then we're going to do you in.
Or we'll let you go free.
In that case, I am going for a watermelon, thank you.
It's got to be, this fruit is going to have
strap me up.
So good. So we've got the full pardon. It's all written out and signed by the Home Secretary,
really
King Charles.
In the mood for
all signed up
now. I really am. Now that I've got the idea in my head, I really am. I really fancy it. Thanks. Yeah.
Also, Mike, I know you said strap me up like you were imagining we're going to give you some kind of humane injection. You're going to be dashed on some rocks.
Okay, even so, strap me up first for that. I prefer to go in stiff as a board for that. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And you're going to be dashed on the rocks by three interns.
It's a training execution.
It's a training execution. And they're recent graduates. One of them did geography at Warwick. One did land economy at Cardiff. I'm not quite sure what that is. And the other one did art history at also at Warwick. But they don't know each other. Different social circles. But what that means is they're going to be, I think that probably means they're not, yeah, it's going to take a while.
It's going to take a few dashings.
It's going to take a few dashings.
Okay, so are you going for watermelon, Mike?
I am, yes.
I think it's nice. It's a good one. And when it's perfect, it's perfect.
Mm. Yeah, it's refreshing.
Mine is a nectarine.
Oh, nice choice. Nice choice. And not a peach, interestingly. Yeah, okay.
I think I prefer a nectarine somehow.
Henry?
I'm going for cantaloupe melon.
Jazz choice.
When it's good, cantaloupe melon. Basically, I was in France over the summer break. And whenever you go to France, actually, almost whenever you go anywhere in the world, you eat the local fruit.
I'll just say this is the most London metropolitan answer to this question I've ever heard in my life.
Why?
So cantaloupe melon. And then we go straight into a mini break in France.
but what happens is when you go abroad on holiday, I think you try the local fruit, it's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And this thing happens where you're going, I'm eating cantaloupe melon again. I'm having the best time of my life. This cantaloupe melon, it's taking me back to my childhood and when I once went to France and had a cantaloupe melon. It's taking me it's taking back to a memory of something quite similar that happened. But what happens is you fall in love with it and you eat it every day and then you come back and for some reason you come back to the UK and no matter how many times you learn this lesson, you still think to yourself, well, hang on a minute. They sell cantaloupe melons in my local supermarket. France isn't that far away. Like, it can't be that. It's just because get on a plane. There's no way. It's going to be fine. And you take it home and you eat it. And it's like, cut out my tongue! Cut out my tongue! And it's like eating a ream of A4 paper that a badger's pissed on.
Yeah, which is what France have sent. Just ensconced in some cantaloupe melon skin that's been left over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
If you want to email us, 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. The first one is from Ollie from Leeds.
Hello, Ollie.
Hi, Ollie.
From Leeds.
As a fan of Provincial Dad Chat, I wanted to share this recent story.
Oh, yeah.
Last weekend, I was down in Brighton for Pride. On the walk to the parade, all the lovely, colourful flags prompted some flag chat between my partner, our mutual friend, and I. Sounds What's the word for the study of flags? I feel like I know this.
Vexillology.
Optimology. What was it, Mike?
Vexillology.
Well, there we go. He says, we discovered the word is vexillology.
It's such a provincial dad thing to know, and Mike's been like a coiled spring with that fact for 10 years.
Yes!
Vexicology. Such a completely useless thing to know. When will you ever need to do... You'll have to be in a situation where you need to hire a flag designer, but quickly. Mm-hmm. I need a vexicologist in the next 4 seconds! Okay.
Yeah. We discovered that the word is vexillology after my friend Googled it.
Funny name for a friend. Hi, everybody. I'm Henry Packer, and I'm...
available to punch up your West End show.
Les Mis needs a giggle? Come to me. Blood Brothers needs a chortle or two? I'm your man.
Can you hear the people laugh?
I didn't get...
No. You didn't get that?
No, I didn't get that.
I was making reference to the song, Can You Hear the People Sing?
Yeah, from Les Mis.
Which I've still not seen Les Mis.
Even though
you punched it up. It's good. I've punched it up. No, I haven't. I'm planning to go and see it soon one day.
We're going to see it. Let's go see it together.
Okay.
We'll do a trip. Right, convent. Let's hear it.
That's strange, I said. That's not the word I was thinking of. Mm. Oh, I know, it's not that. I was thinking of when ships communicate with flags. You know, like on the Beatles cover.
Yeah.
What's that word? It's on the tip of my tongue. Now, Mike knows it.
Semaphore.
Yeah. Semaphore?
Yeah.
God.
At this point, I noticed the little middle-aged chap who'd been walking ahead of us.
Can someone strangle me to death with one of those, you know, near the licorice strings? Just something from licorice. I feel like I want to be killed with some licorice all sorts. Yeah.
At this point, I noticed a little middle-aged chap who'd been walking ahead of us, clad head-to-toe in practical hiking gear. He turned a crisp 180 and proudly announced, "Semaphore, that's the word you're looking for."
Nice.
Before turning back around and power-walking away.
Yeah!
I don't know if he heard me shout, "You're my hero," but I could tell from his stride that he was absolutely beaming.
Yeah.
Godspeed, you provincial legend. Cheers, Ollie.
As he unzipped a home-assembled packet of trail mix. And thought, I'm going to give myself this afternoon's cashew now to celebrate my semaphore knowledge.
Thank you. I really enjoyed that. And it's nice to know there's a hero out there for you.
Hero or bit of a knob.
Come on.
It's an iPad.
Because I've had this. Have you ever had this where you're hearing some people having a conversation? You know the answer.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, God.
You're talking about Warsaw. Right.
Yes. But also,
you can't. Say
you can't
that,
because also you then will reveal the fact that you've been listening to them for the past 2.5 hours and have followed them home into their front room.
But from the front, you've been following them from the front.
But you've been following them,
which
from
is exhausting,
the front, which is
yes.
incredibly difficult yeah. technique. And you'd have to reveal that you're. You'd have to sort of. Well, you'd have to show your hand by emerging from the fireplace. Make the comment. I've had that before where I feel I can help someone or give them some knowledge, but I'm going to reveal that I've been listening. Is that the thing that you find weird?
Yeah. I mean, I did it recently where I told a woman to get off the train and that there'd be a train coming behind and she should get on that one.
Oh, that's good.
Because she was being a bit flustered with her daughter about what train they should get on.
But you know what happens to me, Ben? I have this panic that happens. So I had a Spanish family once ask me directions on the tube. It's on the District Line. I knew the answer. It was something to do with Earl's Court, I think, and changing at Earl's Court. And I wanted to help them so much. I wanted to be the hero for this Spanish family. I really felt they needed it. They needed someone like me to maybe become the sort of head of their Spanish family, maybe to be invited to become the head of their Spanish family.
And to run their Serrano ham factory.
Into the ground, as it would turn out.
He called himself Abuelo Ham.
And what I do is I want to help, and I know the answer, but I panic because I want to help so much. I think I just gave him the wrong directions, or I ran off the train screaming, or something. Like, I just always mess it up in that situation.
Yeah, but at least now you're asked. Ben, your one sounds okay, because like a fluster... You're intervening in a fluster, and a fluster will intrude. Like you don't have to be trying to eavesdrop to hear a fluster, right? Mm. I guess with the Brighton one, with Ollie's one, like you want to know, like if you're on a pride thing, maybe it's all like, isn't there a bit of like jostling about? You're all sort of quite close to each other. There's shared conversations between groups, but I don't know if it's that part of pride, or if I was imagining them marching along the promenade by the seafront, in which case it is harder to about face. And
I never realised that Pride had a slightly sort of provincial dad sort of boring section. Maybe it's towards the back of the parade. I don't know.
There's the back. Yeah. We are.
There's a sort of float with...
Yeah.
Some sort of...
Oh, the float comes through the day after.
The float comes through the day after.
If you're attending the
with people parade, just sort of analysing Ordnance Survey maps and stuff.
Good stuff, Ollie. Thank you. I did know the semaphore one, but that's something. I feel like that's quite common. The other one, I have to admit, the flag one. I there's a bit of the show I'm writing that is concerns a man I know who's a flag fan. So I came across it.
Ah,
okay.
A certain Mr. Farage, perhaps? Okay, Mike, I'll give you some more little things like that, Mike, for you that you'll like. So what's a person that collects stamps called?
Philatelist.
I thought it was leptocographer or something.
Yes, butterflies.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's butterflies, isn't it?
Philatelist, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. There are certain people that want to know all this stuff and spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah. Bell ringer?
Well, I'd call them worse than that, to be honest.
I think that begins with a C.
It does begin with a C.
Is it a croydonologist?
But it is an ologist.
It's a pastichographer?
It's a campanologist.
A campanologist.
God almighty. Can we take this section of the podcast, seal it in a sort of metal bin?
Yeah.
And
send it to Ollie of Leeds.
Send it to Ollie of Leeds.
To dispose of in the Yorkshire Dales.
Yep.
Thanks, Ollie.
Thanks, Ollie.
We spoke last week about sexy cartoon animals.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is going to run and run.
Oh, it's a big one.
Now, it began with Mike talking about how he had a bit of a crush on someone from Dog Tanyan and the Muskerhounds.
The Queen, yeah.
The Queen. Amanda emails, she says, I too had a Dog Tanyan-based crush.
Oh, yeah.
In the form of a spaniel, Aramis.
He was, yeah.
What a heartthrob and total ladies' man. You're not alone, yeah. Mike. Amanda.
Thank you, Amanda.
I'm going to
That's interesting. He was handsome. He was like a sort of, perhaps the Matthew Bainton of his day. He was kind of, he was handsome and slim and erudite and intelligent and charming and witty, a poet. Do you know what I mean? He had those.
So he was kind of Renaissance.
Nice tousled hair. Yeah, that kind of stuff going on. I think I'd have been probably more into Porthos, a bit more sort of your bare end of things.
Yeah.
That's just personal taste. But thank you, Amanda. I feel seen.
The one that a lot of people from my era remember fondly is the Cadbury's Caramel Rabbit.
Yes.
Was very
sexy.
And I think was voiced by Miriam Margolyes.
It was, yeah.
And for me, it's obviously Shrek.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's someone for everyone, isn't there? That's the lovely thing. Yeah.
This is from Alison.
Hello, Alison.
Dear Beans, my six-year-old learnt a new word today.
Oh, yeah.
He had made a TV remote holder out of construction blocks called clicks.
Yeah.
Do you know what they are?
No.
I'm imagining Lego or something like that.
I'm imagining big Playmobil, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Whilst I was praising him and saying how clever he was, he attempted to hang it off the fireplace. There was a loud clattering sound, and then broken black plastic springs, motherboard, batteries and buttons spaffed all over the floor.
Her son was an android? I wasn't expecting that.
Fucking hell.
That's just quite dystopian, this one.
Anyway... He then learned a new word. I believe the words that came out of my mouth were... Right, the first word is Ben, so I assume her six-year-old is called Ben.
Okay.
Ben, you've totally smash-fucked the remote! Which is a word that she learned from Henry Packer.
Yes.
Yeah.
He cried, we had a hug, I can't watch TV, and he can't tell Daddy about the new word he learnt. Until next time, Alison.
But sometimes it's the only one that'll do.
Yeah.
It's time to pay the ferryman.
patreon.com/3beansalad.
A big thank you to everyone who signed up at our Patreon.
Yes, massive thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/3beansalad is the place to go. Now, if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Yeah.
And it was the corduroy hat swap shop, wasn't it?
It was. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
It was the corduroy hat swap shop last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, which seemed to begin in good faith with Katie Q and Susie Q swapping their corduroy mitres for Stephen Strenker and Alice Gribble's used corduroy Korean Gats. Hands were already spat upon and shaken when Paddy Foley, Ewan Griffiths, Tilly Hewitt and Forrest marched in without a pinwheel of corduroy upon their heads, claiming to have been robbed by hat bandits in the Sean Bean Longstay car park. Chris O'Brien and Annalise said they had no business walking through the Longstay after dark ever since Frankie Buttons accidentally destroyed the floodlights doing discus practice several weeks previously, the car park since that time becoming a den of iniquity and Craig Patterson. Lettice said she didn't see what the problem was, but John Empson pointed out she never went anywhere in the dark without wearing her corduroy Corinthian war helmet, so what did she have to worry about? Dave Sid 42, now I understand, and Helen Roberts all interrupted the discussion wanting to know if the war helmet was swappable, offering in exchange a corduroy kepi, dunce cap and 10 gallon respectively. Lettice said jog on, but did offer to swap a set of battered corduroy Chicago-style firefighter helmets. The hat bandit victims claimed these were the very hats that had been purloined. Lettice denied this, and claimed she'd swapped them in advance with Ruth of Bremen or Streatham Hill, Denise Shaler, and Willicent Bulstrode for a corduroy mega mortarboard, capable of holding the heads of up to 14 engineering graduates. Jamie Tidy, Craig Harris, Kate and Arlo all swore on Sean Bean's signed first edition Bible that they had witnessed this exchange, only to recant moments later when Jonesy pointed out they had spent the afternoon watching Backdraft starring Kurt Russell and The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes starring Kurt Russell, and they may have gotten muddled. Katerina Daly, HungryForTie.com and Rachel Heighton tried to get the swap shop back on the road but came under fire themselves after presenting not hats but made-to-measure orthodontic face masks. Starry Ario and Katrin Harris claimed to have information on the identity of the bandits, which they would exchange for an exchange of their corduroy halo hats. Tim Sieber and David Button cried foul, saying, according to the rules of the night, information could not be exchanged unless in the form of corduroy, and so Baby Juno and Big Joe were let in on the secret and set to work translating the data into a corduroy poke bonnet. This was presented to the crowd, but owing to Frankie Button's interior discus practice sessions, many of the lights had been shattered and the bonnet was hard to read. Laura Mead thought Reed Messenger was accused, Sam Potter saw Liam Francis's name, and Renonomy felt certain the bandits were Poppy Fellows and Olivia Goodall. To be on the safe side, Eloise Adamson rounded the lot of them up. Alice Martin secured them in the corduroy stockade, where they were pelted with rotting corduroy by Sean Jarvis. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you, and this is from Emily.
That's an unusual spelling. So she goes for the long E before the main E.
And then the pause.
And the pause. People always have a funny version of their own names these days, don't they? It's always Sean with a this or Will with a that. And sometimes it's Emily with the long E, the pause,
yeah,
and then the Emily.
Which is how it was originally spelled, I think.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Well, it was a way of shouting. It was a way of alerting people to the fact that you were in a, well...
Yes.
If you were called Emily.
And you're from the northeast.
I mean, from the northeast.
Yeah.
Emily writes, "Hello, Beans. I listen to your pod while sewing."
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
"It involves hours and hours of spinning yarn at a tepid pace, only to end up with something completely absurd.
What?
And nothing like what you set out to do
in
the start."
Hang on. No. What?
"And the other is my latest sewing project."
Play the jingle.
Well done, Emily, your badge is in the post. Perfect switcheroo. Lovely.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? Hang on, I thought you were trying to say...
Oh, he's gone the other... What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that... Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually... I thought it... Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God!
It's the old switcheroo.
"Since being with my boyfriend, he has picked up a few of my commonly used phrases. Mm-hmm. His favourite being, 'You're so full of beans.' I used his voice clip along with my duck whistle." to make your theme jingle on a free MIDI software. I hope you like it. It's pure shit. Kind regards, E. Emily.
E. Emily.
Thanks, E. Emily.
So's is self-effacing. Three bean salad listener.
I'm fairly confused as to what this will actually be.
Well, let's hope she's one of those people where she's self-effacing when she knows something's actually really good, because that can happen. The people will be like, oh, no, it's nothing, really. And then they bring in like a four-tier.
And they can really use a duck whistle.
Do you think she's so self-effacing that she's said that it's done on a duck whistle, but it'll actually be done on a full symphony orchestra?
that she operates with her foot.
It could be.
Let's see. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Cheerio. Thank you very much.
Bye.
You're so full of beans. You're so full of beans. You're so full of
Oh, wow.
This has been the Proms. Live from the Albert Hall. Good night.
Oh, magnificent.
The conductor was Andrew Rattle, and the performer was the BBC Symphony Orchestra.
And the goose was Caspian de Frange. Hello. I have some rather sad news to share with you, I'm afraid. Now, you may have noticed that Bluebell hasn't been mentioned on the podcast for quite a while now. And I'm afraid the reason for that, I'm very sorry to have to tell you, is because Bluebell passed away. Now, this happened a while back. And it's taken me a while to feel ready to talk about it on the podcast because it was too raw, basically. But now some time has passed and I'm ready. Bluebell was 12 years old, which is not a bad age for a short hair. And she led, I think, a very happy life where she was extremely almost too well looked after, you could argue. But she did have some underlying health conditions, which we managed for as long as possible. But eventually they caught up with her. So, look, it was very, very sad. And I learned the truth of what I've heard people say before, which is that when you get a pet and when you welcome one of these furry, but not exclusively furry, you know, there are scaly, there are smooth and wet animals, which people also welcome into their lives in love, but often furry. When you welcome one of these furry creatures into your life, you get a huge amount out of it and it's wonderful, but you're booking in heartbreak. You're booking in one of the worst days of your life, and that's the deal. Basically, so that day came around. Bluebell. So many memories. The one that I'm thinking about right now is I'm just picturing Bluebell sitting on my lap, which is something she did a lot, but for some reason it was an honor she only bestowed on me for some reason. She didn't do this with anyone else. She would sit on my lap and just stare at me. And we'd stare at each other. And her breathing would slow down. And my breathing would slow down. And she'd start purring, and I would start mentally purring, and we were very in sync. It was a very intimate, connected moment between the two of us, and it was a very calming and joyful moment for me. And then suddenly she'd just jump up and run off, because that was the thing with Bluebell. She gave a lot, and she would welcome you in, but she also had boundaries, and she needed her own time and space, and I respected that. And she would run off and just leave me sat there with hairy trousers. And I really miss having hairy trousers. I have thousands of memories of Bluebell. And now that I've got this news off my chest, I'm really hoping that Bluebell can now come back into the podcast and that I can now share memories of Bluebell again and that she can live on in pod form. But for now, maybe you would join me in raising a glass or small, low bowl of tap water to Bluebell.
Bluebell, Bluebell, soft and gentle and wise and kind. Bluebell, Bluebell, sturdy paws and silky thighs. Bluebell, there she flies like a furry star. Classic and stylish, like a vintage car. You're gonna go far. Bluebell, Bluebell, take me away on a magical trip. Bluebell, Bluebell, to the Milky Way on your fairy spaceship. Bluebell, I'll feed you meat biscuits upon the moon. Defeat a giant worm like in June. I'll see you there soon. Bluebellina and Bluebarama, Bluebalama and Bluebaruma, Bluebarata and Bluebarata, Bluebarata. You'll swipe off the faces of our enemies. You'll toy with the corpses of anyone who defies our galactic rule. It's cruel to be kind, but mainly to be cruel.